May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I love Eastertide. I love it because it's all about celebrating a gift that keeps on giving. And those are the best kinds of gifts. It's about celebrating the miracle of Jesus' resurrection, but it's also a miracle that generates more and more miracles, bringing new life to ordinary folks like you and me, over and over again, down through the ages. And our first lesson today is a case in point. It tells the story of the amazing resurrection of Tabitha, some say Tabitha, in the city of Joppa. Her resurrection is amazing, and it's awesome. But if we think about it, it's not the only amazing thing about the story. Almost as amazing as this resurrection is the transformation of the character of the protagonist, Peter. I hardly recognize him. I want to say, who is this anyway? Last week, we encountered Peter at the last breakfast on the beach. This is the Peter we know so well. He and the others are out in their fishing boat on the sea when he hears that Jesus is on the shore. And he's so overjoyed that he impetuously jumps over the side of the boat and swims in. But only after he puts his clothes on. Because remember, Peter was out fishing that morning, buck naked. The Peter we remember is that kind of Peter, the Peter that says to Jesus, "You will never wash my feet," and turns around a minute later when he hears the explanation and says, "Oh, please wash me from head to toe." And it's the Peter who is blundering but loyal, who in the Garden of Gethsemane impetuously cut off the ear of the high priest's slave. And it's the blundering, disloyal, and cowardly Peter who betrays Jesus just several hours later when he says three times, "I do not know him." And it's the grieving but unbelieving Peter who hears the news from the women and doesn't believe but rushes off in any event to see for himself. That's the Peter we have come to know. He's not a leader, he's not a teacher, he's not a preacher, and he's definitely not a good follower. He's a sheep, blundering, headstrong, kind of thick and uncomprehending, but usually lovable. Staying on track was difficult for Peter. He needed a shepherd's voice to bring him back over and over and over again and to set him on the path he should follow. And when he wandered, he needed that shepherd's unconditional love and forgiveness. Compare all of that with the disciple we meet today in our first lesson. The disciple who heals Tabitha is a leader. He's a man of great stature in the community, and he's definitely a shepherd. That's obvious to us because as soon as people hear he's in the neighborhood, they send for him. They rely on him. They believe in him to help. And you don't do that without having absolute confidence in the person for whom you send. And when Peter gets there, he proves himself worthy of his reputation. He enters deeply into the power and the presence of God, and then he commands the dead woman to come back to life. He says simply, "Tabitha, get up." And the woman lying dead in that room upstairs somehow hears this voice, and she is restored to life. She hears him call her name. From wherever she is, she follows that shepherd's voice and comes back to this world. And this new Peter and this miracle of resurrection, they remind us of someone else, don't they? They remind us of someone else's voice. We don't have to remember specifically all the miracles in the gospel stories to be aware that this miracle at Joppa is full of the echoes of Jesus' earthly ministry. The Good Shepherd. When Lazarus had been dead for 3 days and was lying in the tomb, Jesus called to him to come out. And he did, because Lazarus knew this shepherd's voice. When the ruler of the synagogue's little daughter was ill and died, Jesus put all the mourners out of her room. He took her by the hand and he said simply, "Little girl, get up." And she was restored to life. This little girl somehow knew and followed the shepherd's voice. So our question today is, what happened to Peter? Because if I've interpreted the significance of this scene in Joppa correctly, it and the many similar scenes that repeat over and over in the book of the Acts of the Apostles, stories that portray Peter and the other disciples healing the sick, preaching boldly, all of those stories reveal that these people have been changed into the likeness of their master. But it wasn't always like that. When Jesus, the Good Shepherd, was arrested, the sheep scattered, just as he had predicted. They deserted, they abandoned Jesus. They trembled and hid in the upper room. And then they returned to their fishing lives in Galilee, to their old life without Jesus, as if it had never happened. And then they were mysteriously transformed. Lo and behold, the sheep became shepherds. Simon ended up strengthening his brethren just as Jesus said he would. But how did it happen? Well, I think it's very simple on one level. Peter and his friends encountered the risen Christ. They encountered the man who had been their shepherd and friend, the man they disappointed, deserted, and betrayed, the one against whom they had sinned. And that morning, when they're out fishing and they see Jesus on the shore, Peter is naked. Now, I've been thinking about this all week, and I think I can make an educated guess about this detail in the story. So while not a fisher person myself, my father, my grandfather, my brothers, my uncles, and all my male cousins fished every spring about now in Algonquin Park and near our island in Georgian Bay. I did not like the fishing part of fishing, but I love to go with them anyway. I wouldn't put that squiggly little worm through a hook, and I wouldn't bash the fish over the head once we had brought them into the boat, and I hated the smell of fish in the boat on a hot day, but I loved my dad, and I loved fishing with him. My father fished primarily to de-stress after a long week in court. And he loved the solitude and the tranquility of sitting in a boat, maybe at dawn or at dusk, a little bit removed from his real life, waiting for the fish to come. But he also did an interesting thing. When he got in that fishing boat, if my mother wasn't there, he became a different person. He was hilarious. He was goofy. He sang to us. He made up limericks. He told jokes. He never took his clothes off when his daughters were in the boat. But according to my eldest brother, whom I telephoned this week, all kinds of naked things happened when we were back at the cottage. And the more stressed he was, the goofier and more naked he became. So it's very possible that Peter is in that boat, naked, because he's de-stressing after the trauma that they have all been through. There's also symbolic value in St. Luke adding this detail of nakedness. Peter feels safe in the boat, way out on the water where nobody can see him. He feels safe enough to let his vulnerability show. But he puts his clothes on as soon as he decides to swim in and meet Jesus, because he desperately wants to hide the loathsome feelings he's feeling about himself. Peter has a guilty conscience. So he gets his clothes on, swims in, but you know, it doesn't matter, because standing before the risen Christ, he is naked anyway. Jesus knows all about what went down. No amount of clothing can cover up the sin of Peter and his friends. And no amount of clothing can prevent Peter from now facing it himself. So as they stand there, meeting Christ face to face, it happened in Jerusalem, it happened on the beach, they are forced to face their own responsibility for what took Jesus to the cross. They are guilty. And if they had suppressed or dissociated those uncomfortable feelings before, they can't do it that morning on the beach. But here's another amazing thing, another miracle, which comes from the miracle of all miracles. What they discover that morning on the beach, what they experience of the risen Christ, is that he is still interested in having a relationship with them. He is still inviting them into relationship with him. They discover that he is accepting, forgiving, bearing, and absorbing all the hurt they have done to him. He doesn't return it in kind. He never did. He never will. And now he's offering each one of them a new beginning. It's still the same relationship, but it's being reworked. So what happens to Peter and to all of the others is that they learn that their sin and their betrayal does not make Jesus betray. It does not make Jesus abandon them. It does not make God abandon them. Simon, son of John, is still Peter to Jesus. Still Peter, the rock on which he will build the church. And Peter's vocation has not been destroyed. And so Peter lives this vocation, and we see that today in our first lesson. Peter lives it out fearlessly and faithfully. In those 40 days after Easter, when the disciples experience the reality of Jesus' resurrection by hearing his voice again, by sitting and sharing a meal with him again, by feeling themselves forgiven and accepted again, they become the shepherds that they were called to be. Like Peter, like Paul, these shepherds take hold of the risen life of Jesus, and they share it boldly all over the known world. They proclaim the good news of a forgiveness and a love that has no beginning and no end. You and I are gathered here today, sheep of the Good Shepherd. We come with our own particular histories of wrongdoing and betrayal, with our own needs for forgiveness and restoration. May God grant that we will encounter this risen Christ and be transformed from the sheep we are into the shepherds we are all called to be. Amen.